Democratic members back in the summer of last year. Several of our members, particularly in the downtown terminal area, brought up the issue of homelessness as something that they would like more information and resources about. So we are approaching today's panel discussion with that particular focus from a business member perspective in mind. Our intent today is not to solve the issue of homelessness, but rather to address this from the perspective of the business community. And we are so grateful for members of the public to be a part of this discussion. I did want to also let you know, if you haven't had a chance to sign in today, we do have a sign-in sheet available in this little hallway area, so if you wouldn't mind doing that on your way out today, we would appreciate it. I would like to tell you a little bit more about the format of our panel discussion. We will start with introductions of our three panelists, and then I will proceed into a time of question and answers with our panelists. Now, the questions that I will be asking came directly from surveying our members in the downtown district about this issue of homelessness and panhandling. So we would also like audience members to have an opportunity to submit questions that you have, keeping in mind the particular focus of our discussion today. We have index cards available for that purpose, and I believe there are a couple of Emmanuel staff members. If you did not pick up an index card, if you raise your hand now, you know that you'll have a question. Staff will walk through and hand you an index card where you can write down your question. If you would like to address it to a particular panelist or to all of the panelists, please indicate that on the card. And then if you are willing to submit your name as well, we would appreciate that. We will take those questions at the end of our time today, approximately 2:45 p.m., and we do aim to end our discussion promptly at 3 p.m., followed by a time of coffee and refreshments if you'd like to continue the conversation out in the Great Hall. So with that in mind, I would like to begin with introductions of our panelists. We have Rob Dahlhaus III, who is the Executive Director of CU at Home. Monica Cherry, she is the coordinator of 24-hour programs at Rosecrans, and Officer Dan Ward from the Champaign Police Department. So can you please join me in welcoming our panelists today? And I would like to give each of our panelists an opportunity to briefly introduce yourselves, and if you wouldn't mind telling us your connection specifically to homelessness in Champaign Center. Can we begin with you, Officer Ward?
Sure. Let me know if you can't hear me. I'm Officer Dan Ward. I've been a police officer for 13 years. I'm the team leader for our crisis negotiation unit. It's green. Is that better? Still good?
Is it that needs to be closer?
Any better? Okay. I've been a police officer for 13 years, all here in Champaign. Before that, I was a military police canine handler for the Marine Corps. I'm the senior field training officer we have, so I get most of our new folks and try to teach them how to deal with public. So that's pretty much me in a nutshell.
All right. I'm Monica Cherry. I am a licensed clinical social worker, and I work with Rosecrans. I am, as Genevieve said, I am the clinical coordinator of 24-hour services there. I have the privilege of working with Rob for some years, as well as Dan and many other individuals throughout our community that assist individuals who are homeless. My primary focus is on the mental health side of the issue. We primarily are in the business of treating mental illness, and there is a strong correlation between mental illness and the homeless population, and so that's what I will be speaking to today.
I'm Rob Dahlhaus. I'm the executive director at CU at Home, and our main focus at CU at Home is to work with the most vulnerable homeless in the community, the street homeless, our friends without an address, as we call them. We'll get more into that in a little bit. I haven't been in this field for very long, just about 5 years. I started as a crisis clinician, actually working with Monica on the crisis team at what was then Community Elements and now Rosecrans. I took over as executive director just a few months ago when our founder and executive director, Melanie Jackson, moved to Colorado. I'm thrilled to have this opportunity. I'm thrilled to be able to be a part of working with our friends on the street and seeing that success that comes through the work that we do with them.
Thank you, Rob, and thank you to all of you. I'd like to start with a very general, broad question, and this is to any of our panelists. What resources, agencies, or programs should our business community be aware of when talking about the homeless population in Champaign Center?
You want to start off?
Sure. I would say that it kind of depends on, excuse me, what kind of services the person is looking for. If it's specifically homelessness, let's say you've got a homeless.
They can't hear.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Hello? No? Yes?
No.
Can you hear me now?
I think
no? Okay. Let me try to fix this. Sorry. How about now?
Yes.
Okay, great. So let's say you've got somebody, a family, that's in a homelessness situation. So there's the emergency shelter for families run through the Regional Planning Commission in Urbana. If you've got, let's say, a female fleeing domestic violence or a female needing those types of services, you've got Courage Connection here in town that can work with them as well. There's several programs that do certain types of transitional housing. We do that, Restoration Urban Ministries, the Time Center, still running the 20 beds through their Level 2 program. There's many others, but that's kind of a broad touch on where they are, where we are with homelessness services. There's not as many as there used to be. Back in 2016, we lost 95 transitional housing beds through state and federal funding cuts, and so that hit the community pretty hard, I would say, in trying to fill the gap of what's available. Right now, because it's wintertime, there are two emergency shelters that are running. The CU Men's Shelter, housed at the New Covenant Fellowship Church, is running 7 nights a week, typically from about 8 p.m. till 8 a.m. I think they've been averaging in the upper 40s for the last few weeks of men using that facility, which is fantastic. I mean, it's sad that the need is that great, but it's great that the service is available. And Austin's Place is the women's shelter that has an 8-bed facility that runs during the winter time, and that's housed in a local church here in town as well. So I think that's enough of.
I don't think they can hear still.
Yeah, I think they're still having trouble.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
We'll try to keep working on it.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as services go for individuals who are homeless that are in need of mental health treatment, we have a variety of services to offer. At Rosecrans, we have case management services. So this would be individuals who work directly with that person on linkage to necessary services. If that's, you know, benefits case management, we have a specific person that works on that. So if they need Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, disability, things of that nature, they can help them with that. Our case managers will also help individuals with just activities of daily living, so learning how to manage their medications and take them appropriately, knowing how to budget their finances, things of that nature. We have therapy services to offer to people. Oftentimes, you know, there's histories of trauma, abuse, neglect, deep-seated issues to work on. So we have a bunch of therapists that work at Rosecrans. We also have our substance abuse treatment programs. So we recently merged with Prairie Center as of January 1st of this year. So we have even more services to be offering. And again, there is a large comorbidity between homelessness and substance use. So we have a lot of services to offer there. So again, we're more on the treatment side as opposed to the housing side of things.
Thank you. My next question is for Officer Ward. This is a question I got from several downtown businesses. In what cases can a business owner or manager ask an individual to move from the front of the business, assuming that there's some sort of disturbance?
Sure. It's going to be really specific. The bottom line is you can ask anyone to leave. The problem we often get is someone will call because something's been going on for a few hours, and we get there and we ask, well, did you ask them to move along? No. Give it a shot. A lot of folks are pretty respectful if you treat them decent. A lot of it comes about how you come across. So ask them if they wouldn't mind moving, if it's bothering your customers, if they're smoking outside in that 15-foot area. If they won't, then give us a call. We'd be happy to come assist. The smoking question came up, so we'll quickly address it. Basically, it's governed by the health department. It's not something the police department specifically directly enforces. The way the city has chosen to do that is that if someone is smoking in your facility, in your business, it's the business owner's responsibility to ask them to move along. If they will not move along, then we are called for the crime of trespassing because they didn't leave. To be honest with you, we've not had much issue with this. We thought it'd be a problem when it started off a few years ago. It hasn't. Most people are pretty respectful, and so it sort of takes care of itself. As far as the front of your business, that's a public space. They're allowed to be there. So if you have a problem with it, talk to them about it. If it's an issue that you don't think you can resolve, you can give us a call. If you do give us a call about an issue, would you please, and you have the right to say you don't want contact, but would you please say you wanted contact? Because if you don't say you want contact, we can assume that for some safety reason or other, you don't want us to have contact with you, and we do take that seriously. So if there's a problem we can't solve without some input from you, we can't solve it. So if you're comfortable, say you'd like contact with us. That way we'll come talk to you, we'll figure out what the problem is, and we'll see if we can't resolve it together.
Thank you. This is a question, and actually a subject that came up again with our downtown business owners, that there is a perception among some of our downtown business owners that some of the individuals who loiter in Champaign Center are not actually homeless, but in fact are fighting for profit. And so I wondered if you wouldn't mind addressing that. Is it true? What would you say to this? And how should this perhaps influence our interaction with them?
Sorry, I lost my mic. There we go. Yes, I can definitely speak to that. I would say, I don't know a percentage, but there are a lot of folks that that are panhandling on, you know, downtown, midtown area, Green Street, those kinds of areas that are not homeless. Many of them, you could say they're couch surfing, they're moving from one place to another. They're not necessarily street homeless. Several of them do get a Social Security or disability check. And are just trying to supplement the income that they get from that. You know, normally $733 a month is kind of what those folks are getting. So, again, I don't know percentage on it. The sad part is the people that really need the money, it ends up giving them a black eye, because those are the folks you see when you're walking down the street. You know, you see the person shaking the cup, holding the sign, you know, bone cancer, please help, trying to get a ride to Danville. And in general, we're compassionate people, so we're going to feel, it's going to tug on our heartstrings a little bit, but you don't really know. For a long time, I've said to folks when they ask this similar question is, if you don't know, if you're wondering, give us a call. We've got two street outreach workers that part of their job is going to those places, talking to that person, and figuring out what is the need. That's just a way to kind of take some of the onus off of you and kind of let our guys do what they do and figure out what the story is, what the true need is.
And then this question is for any of our panelists that wish to address it. Would you encourage or discourage giving money to panhandlers? Why or why not? And if not, what would you suggest is an alternative course of action?
Pick up on this one. It's completely your choice. You can, if your heart tells you to give to them, give to them. That's between you. The thing I would ask, though, is one of the big problems we have are the subjects standing on streets, up on the curbs, up on the medians, panhandling with signs from traffic. That is actually illegal. They're not allowed to do that. You can only panhandle. Panhandling is protected. It's by the First Amendment. They're allowed to stand on a street or on a sidewalk, not on a street, on a sidewalk, and ask pedestrians for money in a quiet, respectful manner. The person chooses not to, they're on their way. However, being on the median is illegal because it creates a hazard. So if you are going to give, please do not stop in traffic to give money or whatever out your car window to do it. please, if you need to, pull down the street, park, and you can catch up with them. So that's the only caveat I might have for that. Otherwise, do what your heart tells you.
Monica, Rob, would you add anything to that?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think the do what your heart tells you. You know, if you're feeling the tug on your heart that I need to give to this person, then by all means, do that. You don't know what's going to be done with the money, but that's okay. You know, that's okay. I think one thing that I would offer, and this goes along kind of with our ministry of wanting to increase dignity and, you know, self-confidence for the folks on the street. If you're going to give money, don't just give it to them. Stand there, look them in the eye, have a conversation with them. Even if it's just for a couple minutes, you've established that relationship with them. It's not just giver and receiver. You're taking the time, you're investing, whether it's a minute or 10 minutes, in that person. So if your heart's telling you to give money, I would encourage you, don't just hand it to them and walk away. Ask them their name. Try to get some of their story. You never know what you might find out and who's gonna touch your heart in a way that you weren't expecting.
Thank you. At this point, I'd like to just pause, and I'm sure that you might have some questions formulating. If so, please be sure to write these down on index cards that were provided at sign-in. If you need an index card, Reverend Beth Maynard is available to pass those out to you, and we'll collect them in just a couple of minutes. Following up with Officer Ward regarding the panhandling situation, does the City of Champaign have ordinances regarding panhandling? Can you tell us more what these cover and what protections are offered to business managers and owners that they should be aware of?
Sure. The main focus, we do have a city ordinance against aggressive panhandling. Panhandling to the point where it's a nuisance or it infringes on the rights of others. So, like I said, panhandling in and of itself is protected. Aggressive panhandling is not. If you're panhandling within 10 feet of a bus stop, within 10 feet of an ATM, if you're touching people that you're asking for money, if you're doing it in an aggressive manner where someone might feel like they have to give now, and there's a few other things, those are all protected where you just can't do it. And that's where the police can help enforce those. Part of what we do isn't just... It's to also instruct those who are panhandling in our community and maybe new what they can and cannot do. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten out with folks and they didn't know they couldn't do that, or they didn't know they couldn't stand on the median. So it's an education for both sides. Usually we do start with warnings, so if you're feeling like we're being tough on folks, give us a call. Usually we give a warning or two before we start citing folks. I can honestly tell you I know every single person I've cited by name because we've had multiple conversations before I've cited them. That is protected. They're not allowed to do that. So give us a call if you feel like there's something that went wrong or somebody was doing something you didn't appreciate.
Thank you. And then to everyone here, Officer Ward, you touched on this briefly, but if an individual is, say, using foul language or aggressively approaching customers as they walk out of a place of business, I have heard you say that you would encourage a business owner to move on and, if necessary, to contact the police department for this contact. What else can a business manager or owner do, and at what point should they interface with other resources and agencies?
The issue of screaming and yelling. A person who, let's for instance say, is mentally ill, is not acting in a physically aggressive manner, is simply talking in a manner that may be uncomfortable for folks, there's absolutely nothing the police department's going to do to take enforcement action against them. We're going to try to talk to them. That's clearly a mental health issue. We're going to try to find resources for them. So if you call us for someone who's being loud or just obnoxious, there may not be much we can technically officially do, but that doesn't mean our contact's going to stop. I call Rob and his guys. Quite often I call Monica. What do I do in this type of situation? What services do I have? Are you guys familiar with them? And if they can provide any information, we try to do what we can. We try to get in touch with family. So there's a lot we can do as far as the business owner goes. Ask them to move along if you need to. Ask them if they need anything. Ask them if they'd like a glass of water. And then a few minutes later, okay if you don't need anything else, it's time to go. If you don't feel comfortable doing that, you can call us. It's okay. Does that answer your question?
Thank you. Yeah, that's helpful. And at this point, we would like to go ahead and collect those index cards. If anyone has a particular question that they would like to ask to a particular panelist or any of our panelists, we'll take those now. And we'll just take a moment to review those and then to share them with the public and with the audience here. So take a glass of drink of water.
If I could piggyback off of what Officer Ward said as well, you know, contacting, who to contact when you're experiencing that type of situation. One thing that I mentioned earlier with our street outreach, the two men that work at CU at Home, again, that being part of their job, if you have somebody that you're not sure, like, okay, should I call the police, should I not? We've worked with the police departments, we've worked with the hospitals, and we'd like to more so work with the business owners, because again, we know these folks. These are people that we work with and encounter on pretty much a daily basis. We've got a drop-in center down on Green Street where our friends from the community and our friends without an address come every day to hang out. And so these are people we've had interactions with, and sometimes, correct me if I'm wrong, Officer Ward, but sometimes when our friends see a police officer, they kind of put up a barrier. If they're seeing more of a friendly face, again, it's all about your delivery and how you approach somebody and how you treat them, you may get a better result. So I made sure to bring a lot of information about our street outreach guys, and as business owners, it would be good for you to have their contact information. So actually, day or night, we have somebody that's on call and available to come out and help in those situations.
Many people have some knowledge that mental health issues is closely tied to the issue of homelessness. Can you comment more on this for us?
Sure. So does anybody have an estimate of the percentage of homeless individuals who have mental illness? Any guesses? 80%, pretty high. Luckily, it's only about 20 to 25%, but you know, that still means that about, you know, 1 in 4, 1 in 5 individuals who are homeless are dealing with some severe form of mental illness. And I think it's probably fair to say probably 80% or more are probably dealing with some level of depression. It's got to be really difficult to not have a home and you know, not have that type of a resource for yourself. But approximately 20 to 25% of these individuals have some form of severe mental illness. In a survey that was done in 2014 here in Illinois, there were a little bit over 13,000 homeless individuals throughout our state. And even though that number had slightly declined from the survey that happened 4 years prior in 2010, it doesn't eliminate the struggles that those 13,000 individuals are experiencing. And, you know, so how does that relate to mental health? Well, people with mental health issues are much more likely to become homeless than the general population due to the fact that symptoms often disrupt their ability to do their activities of daily living. So to pay their bills, to keep a clean apartment, you know, they may be thrown out because they're not keeping up with those types of things. It impairs their ability to do things like self-care and household management. It impairs their ability to form and maintain stable relationships. And oftentimes they end up pushing the people closest to them away. You know, without that kind of support, again, you know, they're more likely to become homeless. And people with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder are particularly vulnerable to becoming homeless. So along with having poor mental health, it can also affect their physical health. So it kind of affects their entire system. So, you know, people with mental illness may neglect to take care of themselves, like we said, of doing self-care. So they may not do things to prevent themselves from diseases. You know, the inadequate hygiene due to homelessness may lead to physical problems such as respiratory infections, skin diseases, exposure to tuberculosis or HIV. In the United States, half of the homeless population with mental illness also suffers from substance abuse and dependence. And some people with mental illness self-medicate using street drugs. which can lead not only to addictions, but also to disease transmission from injection drug use. The combination of mental illness and substance use and poor physical health make it very difficult for these individuals to obtain employment in residential stability. Pretty makes sense as, when you think about that. So, you know, again, as the representative from Rosecrans, which is the largest mental health and substance abuse treatment provider here in Champaign County, you know, I've talked a little bit about the services that we can provide to these individuals. Rob talked about our TIME Center, which is our men's transitional housing program. This is a 20-bed facility where these are for individuals who are homeless, but they have to have some form of income, whether that's Social Security or disability or a part-time job. You know, there's a lot of things that could qualify them for that. But again, many of these individuals don't have some form of income. So, you know, that would disqualify them from that program. And that is the only, like, housing-type program we have currently. You know, the other services that we do have to offer are on the treatment side. So the mental health and the substance use treatment side. I did bring cards. We have these very nice dual-sided cards. On one side, they're blue. The other side, they're orange. And they have our phone numbers if an individual wants to reach out for mental health or substance abuse treatment. And so it's all there in one card. So I'll have these for people, and they can just call to get the information over the phone or do an intake over the phone to get linked up with treatment. That being said, I understand that an individual who's homeless, that's going to pose a lot of barriers to getting necessary treatment. So I do recognize that. So, you know, we're always very cognizant of that, and we will do everything to work with other treatment providers and other providers in the community to ensure that that person is holistically getting taken care of.
Thank you. We'll do about two or three more questions directly from our business members, and then I'll take the questions from the audience today. This question's for everyone here. What advice would you give to elderly customers or perhaps those who have concerns about interacting with the homeless from a personal safety standpoint? Is there a reason to be scared?
I think the advice I'd give is the one I give to my kids. If at 2 in the morning you're out walking the streets of Champaign and you feel uncomfortable, you probably should be home in bed. That has nothing to do with age. That has to do with the time of the day when folks are out, and very little good happens at dark. That being said, we have the daily bread across from us. I encounter many in our homeless a lot. There's actually a really, and I hate to generalize, our homeless, I've never in the 13 years I've been doing this see them take advantage of old folks. So if you're elderly and you're uncomfortable around people who may be mentally ill, people who may be dirty, people who may be smelt, I'm sorry. Am I worried for your safety? No. If you're taking precautions of a normal person, I don't fear for you from our homeless. Does that mean it's never happened? No. I'm sure at some point in the history of Champaign, a homeless person has committed a crime against an elderly person. We don't see it, though. It's not something that I would put out a news bulletin about. This is a good city. Mainly, a lot of what we see is how you treat people is how you get treated back. A lot of times, something that may turn into a physical spat or an argument between two people, maybe one of them being homeless, starts off really benign. Starts off really as a comment taken out of context or something. So treat people well. You don't need to be concerned. Take normal precautions as you would as a normal person, and you should be just fine. If you're uncomfortable with those people, then I'm sorry. But you have nothing statistically or historically to worry about.
And this question is for Rob. We know that your agency has an event that brings some awareness of homelessness to Champaign Center. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, absolutely. And I got so excited earlier talking about the other services, I forgot to talk a little bit about what we do, and then I'll lead into that event if I can. So I talked a little bit about the Phoenix Daytime Drop-In Center down on Green Street, where folks from the community and folks from the street are able to come together And it's a unique volunteer opportunity where you get to meet these folks from the street. You get to learn about them. You get to play cards and play board games and just talk and interact with them. And, you know, some of that fear that we were just talking about can be alleviated if you just look somebody in the eye and have a conversation with them and understand that they're a human being just like you. I think that can cut out a lot of that fear. So that's one part of what we do. I mentioned street outreach already, connecting with hospitals and local law enforcement, and meeting people where they're at, meeting the people in Westside Park, meeting them under the bridges, getting calls from concerned citizens that, hey, I saw this guy in a tent under a bridge. I don't know what's going on with that. That's a huge part of what we do. That's kind of our first contact with those folks. We have transitional housing, like I talked about a little bit ago, as well as education and advocacy, which is part of this event that I'll mention in a minute, and just doing stuff like this, doing discussions like these where people can help understand the homeless population a little better and help break that stereotype of what we think of in our minds when you hear the word homeless. Chances are, when you say the word homeless, there's probably a negative thought that comes into your mind. And it's okay, because that's just kind of the stereotype that goes with it. You know, you think dirty or smelly or alcoholic or something. And the truth of it is, that's not necessarily the case. We see so many folks come into the Phoenix every day that do not fit that stereotype at all. excuse me. So the event that Genevieve mentioned, One Winter Night, how many people have heard of One Winter Night, been a part of One Winter Night? Awesome. So it's an educational event, a community outreach or community awareness event that we do every year, the first Friday in February. It's coming up here in about 3.5 weeks, Friday, February 2nd. And through this event, our participants have an opportunity to sleep outside in a cardboard box for 12 hours on the streets of Champaign, down Neal and up Walnut, to get the perspective of what it would be like to sleep outside. You know, after 12 hours outside in the cold, in the potential snow and rain, imagine how happy you're going to be. You know, we encounter a lot of folks that are frustrated and upset. And I tell you, if I had to be out there all night, I probably would be too, you know. So that it's a unique opportunity for you as a community member to see what that would be like. The other cool part about the event is we actually have six speakers that speak throughout the night from 7 to 10 p.m., connecting different parts of the community with homelessness. So law enforcement and homelessness, substance abuse and mental health and homelessness, women and homelessness, families and homelessness, those kinds of topics will be available again this year for you to come and hear from speakers just like us that work for different agencies in the community and how they see homelessness affecting the people they serve, how they're able to work with them. So I would encourage anybody to come out, to sign up, to participate, to volunteer, or just come out to educate yourself, to see the event, to talk to the box dwellers, to hear the speakers that are going to be there. It's a very unique opportunity. And if you can expand your mind a little bit and think of what that might be like for somebody else, when you put yourself in somebody else's shoes, you learn a whole lot. So I would just encourage anybody that has questions about that, I'll be here afterwards, and I'd be happy to get you a lot of information about the event.
Thank you. And last question to all of our panelists before we go into audience questions. What can members of the public and the business community do to help the homeless in Champaign Center?
Like I said earlier, just showing somebody that you care. It seems so small and so cliche, but truth be told, I think one of the main reasons we see so many people come into the Phoenix is because they're craving community. They're craving not attention, but craving conversation. You know, they want to be able to feel like a member of society again. And for whatever reason that they're in the position they're in, they're still craving that. They're still wanting those conversations. They're still wanting to feel like they have some self-worth and have some self-dignity. So I would encourage anybody, when you come across somebody like that, one way to help them, it might not be giving them money, it might be, but one way you can help them is just acknowledging their existence. I've had box dwellers in the past at the event tell me when they finished, they said, you know, we're out there and people are walking by us and it's like we don't even exist. And it's like, I'm there, I have a home, I'm just participating in this event, but because I'm on the street, people still walk right by me. And that's a thought I'd never considered. You know, once you put on that cloak of homeless for that night, you're kind of shunned. So it's kind of a sad reality. But how can you help? I would say just, you know, helping somebody improve their self-dignity. And if you have any concerns, like I said, you can always give us a call. We know these folks. We know what's going to help them along. And we're there to do what we can.
I think also, if you're wanting to do something, you just got to try. My wife and I, we assist with the food pantry in our church. Not something I ever wanted to really do. She really pushed us both into it, but it's something I wouldn't give up now. So I would say reach out there, just find something and give it a try, because you're all here for a reason, I'd imagine. So step out and find your little niche and just help out.
Yeah, going off of both Rob and Dan have said, you know, I think, you know, first of all, the first step is really humanizing these individuals. And, you know, again, that self-dignity piece goes a long way. And, you know, I think getting involved in your community, you know, One Winter Night is a great event, you know, but that's one night a year. You know, get involved beyond that. I mean, we have a great NAMI chapter, you know, here in our community. Get involved with that. You know, get involved with anything that's going to make you more aware of the resources and the agencies in our community that can provide help to any kind of individual throughout our community. So just get involved.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and get those cards. We have approximately 15 minutes to take these questions, so we will get through as many as possible in that amount of time.
Dang it.
So this first question. Is there a quick reference type card available for businesses with suggestions for how to best handle interactions? For example, one, politely request they move along, two, call, fill in the blank, three, call the police, or a list of phone numbers. So what references, resources?
There is not in that sense. The really only reference we have is going to be the City of Champaign Legal Code for City Ordinances. There's state stuff for a lot of these things, but basically we follow our city ordinances. So you can go to the City of Champaign Legal Department website. You can follow the link if you're good at the internet. It's called MuniCode, MUNICODE. If you put MuniCode Champaign in a Google search, you'll jump right to it. It's a little wordy, it's a little legally, but that's our reference. Otherwise, give us a call. I'll be happy to talk to you about it. I'll be happy to jot down a list if it makes it easier. So if you have trouble with that, give us a call. Our job is also to educate, so feel free to call.
And we addressed this in our last question, but it has some additional input here. So what are some ways community members can help? Are there organizations that have needs that are not being met? Is there a need for volunteers at any of these organizations?
There's always a need for more volunteers. I can only speak for CU at home, but I know other organizations. Austin's Place, for instance, the Women's Overnight Shelter in the wintertime is always looking for volunteers to be there with the women. I think that's a great opportunity for anybody to see how people act in an overnight. I know that's a difficult time, but that would be one example. We have several volunteer opportunities. The biggest one I would point people to, other than our event upcoming, is just coming to the Phoenix. You know, some people have a lot of anxiety about that, about interacting with somebody in a homeless situation. And like Dan said earlier, you don't know what you can do until you try. And so I'd encourage you, come down for an hour and just sit in the room and see what happens and talk with our social worker that's there. Talk with one of our street outreach guys. I'll be happy to show you around. I think that's a good way just to get involved any way you can.
Next question. Where would you advise a homeless person to go overnight if there are no open
Well, luckily right now, the CU Men's Shelter, again, housed in at New Covenant Fellowship, does have openings and has every night. We hit capacity. I say we because I'm a part of that shelter as well, part of that program. It hit capacity last week, I want to say it was, but we worked to get an overflow shelter option going. When we started this emergency shelter for men discussion last year, early last year, we didn't want to turn anybody away. That seems counterintuitive of the idea of an emergency shelter. It seems counterintuitive that a law enforcement officer at 2 a.m. can't drop somebody off there. So for men right now, there is an option. If we shouldn't be at capacity, hopefully we'll always have those beds throughout the winter. Austin's Place, again, is an 8-bed facility for women. They have to check in at Courage Connection at, I believe, 6:30 in the evening. But they've also, if I understand right, have had at least one or two available each night. So they're still able to house 6 or 7 every night. But as far as those two shelters go, men and women, there are options available this winter, thank goodness.
What about our warming shelters?
Warming shelters, great question. So, you've got the libraries, public places that are open. Folks can go and warm up. The Phoenix Drop-In Center is also an emergency warming center when the temperature feels like single digits. So that includes wind chill. So for instance, upcoming this weekend, it's going to feel really cold, so we'll be open basically from the time the shelter closes in the morning around 8 a.m. till the time it opens at 8 p.m. We will have staff, board, and community members there for those 12 hours for people to come in and warm up. Another great volunteer opportunity if you're looking for something this weekend.
And this question is for Officer Ward. Can panhandlers come up to cars and make sounds in parking lots?
It's a very unique question. Private property, there is no limitation on where someone can or cannot ask for money. But at the same point, if someone is sticking their head, this has happened in the past, someone is coming in and infringing on your space, sticking your head in your window, that's when you need to give us a call. Do what you need to do to be safe, close the windows, lock your doors, and give us a call. If people are acting inappropriately, give us a call. So technically for that question, that's completely legal. If you'd like to give to them. If not, tell them no thank you and have a good day. But what you're describing there is completely legal.
Okay. This question is for Rob. Can a business call See You at Home to assist if there is a homeless individual consistently showing up in front of the business? Can they help figure out if they need help?
Absolutely, 100% yes. That is the main part of our street outreach team is for business owners, hospitals, law enforcement to call us. We can come out, talk to the person. Again, chances are we know them already and we can help them either move along or we can help them find a solution. A lot of times there's so much trust that has to be built up with the folks that we work with that it's not going to be that first time we talk to them, probably not the second or third, but that 25th time that we talk to them and now we've built that trust and that rapport with them, that might be the time when something clicks and it's like, okay, now I'm ready to go to a shelter. Now I'm ready to go to treatment. Now I'm ready to listen to you and help me, you know, learn more independent living skills or, you know, how to budget money or that kind of stuff. You know, you just never know which time it's gonna take. So that is a long answer for the short answer of yes, absolutely, give us a call.